This is Aldous Huxley, and these are the sounds of the brave new world, of test tube and decanter, of hissing injectors and gurgling blood substitute. The year is AF-632, 632 years after Ford. We are inside the London Hatchery and Conditioning Centre, and this is the fertilising room, an enormous laboratory where the temperature is never allowed to fall below 98.6. And here comes the director of hatcheries and conditioning in person, bringing with him a group
Tomorrow
of young
students.
Tomorrow
you'll be settling down to serious work. Today I just want to give you a general idea of things. These are the incubators, and here is the week supply of ova, kept at blood heat. Come along, boys. Now here, we immerse the eggs into a warm bouillon containing free-swimming spermatozoa. Immersion continues until the eggs are all fertilized. Ah, and over here, here is where we bottle the alphas and betas. In short, gentlemen, the perfect process for manufacturing healthy babies. Are there any questions?
Sir, will you explain the Bakunovsky process?
I'm glad you asked that. Students, take this down. Bakunovsky's process, where in olden times one egg made one embryo which made one baby. Today we've improved on all that. Now the egg will bud, will divide, from 8 to 96 buds, and every bud will grow into a perfectly formed embryo, and every embryo into a mature baby, making 96 human beings grow where only one grew before. Progress.
But what advantage is it, sir?
Oh, my good boy, can't you see? Where in olden times nature allowed us only to have twins or perhaps triplets or so, today we can create scores, yes, scores of identical individuals. We can manufacture men and women in uniform batches. Think of it. An entire factory staffed with the product of one single egg. 96 identical individuals working 96 identical machines. At last, society really knows where it stands.
Det her er fra Den fagre nye verden, der er skrevet af Aldous Huxley i 1931. Det er en skræmmende science fiction roman, der præsenterer en fremtid med perfekt fremstillede babyer, skabt i reagensglas, perfekt til at passe ind i forskellige samfundsklasser. Og selvom det her scenarie stadig er langt væk fra vores virkelighed, er hans forudsigelser om fremtiden i muligvis ikke så forkerte. I 2018 blev de første genmanipulerede babyer født i et laboratorie i Kina. Den kinesiske videnskabsmand He Xiangkui chokerede verden ved at hævde, at han havde lavet de første genmanipulerede babyer. Hans mål var at gøre babyerne resistente over for HIV, og det siges, at det lykkedes ham at ændre det rigtige gen, men at han ikke havde lavet den rigtige mutation, der er forbundet med HIV-resistens. I stedet havde han lavet en tidligere uset mutation, hvis betydning stadig er ukendt. He Xiangkui sidder nu i fængsel. Hans arbejde er aldrig blevet publiceret. Og de langsigtede konsekvenser mutationerne vil have for babyerne, og som de muligvis vil videregive til fremtidige generationer, er stadig ukendt. Mutationerne blev lavet ved hjælp af CRISPR, der er et berømt værktøj til genmanipulation. Men det er også meget mere end det. I denne her episode af Lyden af Videnskab skal vi møde fire forskellige forskere, der vil udbrede viden om, hvad CRISPR er for en mekanisme, og hvad den kan bruges til. Vi vil høre om, hvordan CRISPR blev opdaget, og hvordan værktøjet kan bruges til genmanipulation, og hvilke etiske dilemmaer det involverer. Og i den sidste del af episoden vil vi gå ind i, hvad CRISPR ellers kan bruges til i forskning, og hvilke typer af CRISPR-mekanismer der findes, og de perspektiver, de har for videnskaben og for menneskets udvikling. Og det er her i den sidste del af episoden, det bliver rigtig nørdet, og det giver en dyb forståelse for, hvor genial naturen er, og hvordan vi fremskynder den evolutionære udvikling ved at bruge de mekanismer, der har taget andre skabninger millioner af år at udvikle på nye måder til gavn for vores egen art. Hvis nogen af jer har hørt den podcast, jeg lavede for The Science and Cocktails podcast om CRISPR, så er det her lidt af det samme, bare i en fordansket version. Lyden af videnskab. Velkommen til.
Lyden af videnskab.
Det vi ved.
Brain is a strange instrument.
What I want to know is what's going on.
Are these right?
Somewhat unfamiliar conception.
I want to know why the universe exists.
Question. What goes on in your brain?
The simple mathematical error.
Non-selective chemicals.
Ravying.
And the experiment.
It's about how we fit into all of this. And
what you see when you look is not what is really there.
Some distant civilization.
CRISPR er en forkortelse for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeats. Og det er en slags immunforsvar, der findes i bakterier og archaea. Archaea er en form for encellede organismer, som i bund og grund er ret primitive, men som har nogle meget avancerede immunforsvarsmekanismer, der er blevet udviklet igennem millioner års evolution for at forsvare organismerne mod virus.
So CRISPR is just a like repeated DNA sequence, and between the repeated sequence, there are short fragments of DNA that are derived from viruses that infect these microorganisms.
Det her er Su Ping, der er lektor ved Københavns Universitet. CRISPR er et adaptivt immunforsvar. Det vil sige, at når en bakterie bliver angrebet af en virus, skærer den et stykke virus-DNA ud og gemmer det i sit eget DNA, som en slags hukommelse, der fortæller, at en virus med den type DNA-sekvens er farlig.
So I take this sequence, I put in my memory bank, and then when I meet this sequence again, by the sequence similarity, I know, okay, I have seen this before, I know this is the enemy, and now I need to destroy it.
Når den samme virus så angriber bakterien igen, kan bakterien genkende den, at den skal destrueres hurtigst muligt.
There is always competition between different species. There is fight. There is also harmony, but there is fight. Different immune systems are used by different organisms to fight against invaders. This mechanism has helped bacteria and archaea to survive virus infection.
CRISPR hjælper altså bakterier og archaea med at overleve virusangreb. Men CRISPRs evne til at skære gener ud af et genom gør den også til et ideelt værktøj til genmanipulation. Og bioteknologien udvikler sig hurtigt i søgen efter måder at bruge teknikken til at kurere kræft og genetiske sygdomme. Men den samme teknologi kan bruges til at ændre DNA i befrugtede æg og potentielt til at kunne konstruere det perfekte menneske.
And here we have the bottling room. Little embryos, carefully bottled, being rocked gently to and fro, as they did in olden days. And here is our Mr. Henry Foster, in charge of bottling. Oh, Henry.
Yes, sir.
Please explain the process to the students.
Oh, delighted, sir. This way, gentlemen. Here, we advance the process. One by one, the eggs are transferred from their test tubes into these larger decanters and moved along to the labelers. Carefully labeled as to heredity, date of fertilization, sex, name, serial number. Gentlemen, there are 88 cubic feet of card index in this room. Now, here is where we actually predestine and condition. Nothing is so unstabilizing to society as unhappy people. We avoid all that by preconditioning our embryos. And now we are entering the heat conditioning room. Hot tunnels alternating with cool tunnels. Exposure to cold is accompanied by exposure to X-rays. By the time these babies are decanted, they have a perfect horror of cold. Thus, they are perfectly prepared to emigrate to the tropics to be miners and acetate silk spinners and steel workers.
And that is the secret of happiness and virtue, liking what you have got to do. All conditioning aims at that, making people like their unescapable social destiny.
Fra den farvere nye verden skal vi et helt andet sted hen, nemlig til der, hvor det hele startede. Roger Garrett, som vi nu skal møde, er professor emeritus ved Københavns Universitet, og han har været ombord siden CRISPR først blev opdaget.
We saw these CRISPRs in the late 90s when we were sequencing genomes. And we knew that they were important, and we talked about it a lot internally in the lab about what they could be doing and why they were so extensive. We noticed very early on that some of them match viruses, because we've been sequencing viruses from this organism. At that time, we were focusing on finishing the genome, which was very difficult. So that was the main obsession, and we had this repeat thing on the side that we talk about over a cup of coffee when we relaxed and so on.
Roger Garrett og hans kollegaer så de her CRISPR-gentagelser i Archaea-genomerne. Men på det tidspunkt havde de meget travlt med at sekventere det første genom.
Unfortunately. And then it was another 6 years before Mojica, the Spanish guy, actually presented the data the first time. And then we said, oh.
I 2002 publicerede den spanske forsker Francis Mojica den første artikel om CRISPR. Og derefter gik også Roger Garretts forskningsgruppe helt ombord i CRISPR-forskningen.
A lot of labs started moving in slowly. And it wasn't surprising to us at that time because biochemistry had become really boring. I mean, there was very little going on, and very little exciting. I mean, it was all just repeating things with another organism.
Det var en lidt tør og kedelig periode inden for biokemisk forskning, hvilket opdagelsen af CRISPR forandrede fuldstændig. Og nu blev CRISPR set i mange forskellige variationer, og alle var meget begejstrede.
And the progress was very rapid over the next 5, well, until today. Still very rapid. Around 2013, we had international meetings from 2005 onwards, once we knew it was an immune system. And then it was just a small group of people, a small group of labs that were participating and congratulating each other on their exciting work and so on. And it was very, very friendly, you know, it wasn't competitive because there weren't many groups, so it was just people who knew each other and worked together and talked, shared data and so on. But then the big groups started moving in.
I starten var der kun få forskningsgrupper i feltet, og de var optaget af at blive klogere på CRISPR-mekanismen. Og alle talte sammen og delte hele tiden deres nyeste viden. Men så kom nogle nye forskningsgrupper ind i feltet, og de var mere interesserede i at bruge CRISPR til genmanipulation.
Especially the big American groups who hadn't been involved before, but they saw the commercial potential.
And what kind of commercial potential did they see back then?
Gene therapy, gene modifications. That was the main point, that you could cut the genome very precisely, at least in theory. And so you could cut at any point in the gene, or you could cut, excise a gene, or you could remove part of a gene and replace it. I mean, all these basic functions were suddenly possible.
Så feltet blev opdelt i to forskellige lejre. Forskere, der var optaget af grundforskning i CRISPR, og den mere anvendelsesorienterede gruppe, der søgte måder at anvende CRISPR til genmanipulation og genterapi. På en særlig konference blev det meget tydeligt, at de to lejre stort set ikke talte sammen.
Around 2013, it was just a crazy meeting, because there were all the people who wanted to do gene therapy, and there were the people who were interested in the mechanisms of the CRISPR systems, and they didn't talk to each other. The gene manipulators just wanted the latest details on the specificity of cutting and which were the best enzymes to use for their work. What is a bit disturbing for me is the ethics of this.
Roger Garrett mener, at det er meget vigtigt, at der er nogle helt klare etiske retningslinjer i forhold til brug af CRISPR, for at der ikke er forskere, der bruger CRISPR til genmanipulation på uhensigtsmæssige måder. Og at man kun bruger genmanipulation til at kurere sygdomme, der ellers ikke kan kureres. Og ikke begynder at lave om på organismer, bare fordi man kan. Og fordi man er nysgerrig på, hvad der kan ske.
But I sense from the review that some people were just saying, well, okay, we have this operon that does this. If we change one of the genes in the operon that does something different, could the operon then have another function? You know? And of course, this is purely speculative. And
what kind of function could that be? What, can you give an example of this?
I mean, you can imagine all sorts of scenarios. So you're basically doing experiments on organisms. I mean, that's a sort of extreme case, but I had the feeling that the ethical rules had not been worked out. You know, people were just doing anything they felt like.
The nursery was on the fifth floor. The sign over the door said Neo-Pavlovian Conditioning Room. It was a large, bare room, very bright and sunny. Half a dozen nurses, trousered and jacketed in the regulation white viscose linen uniform, were engaged in setting out bowls of roses in a long row across the floor.
Now bring in the children.
They hurried out of the room and returned in a moment, each pushing a kind of tall dumb waiter, laden on all its four wire-netted shelves, with eight-month-old babies, all exactly alike, a Bokanovsky group, and all, since their caste was Delta, dressed in khaki diapers.
Før vi møder en af de forskere, der udvikler metoder baseret på CRISPR til genmanipulation, skal vi lige tilbage til Su Ping for at forstå, hvordan CRISPR, som jo er en mekanisme udviklet i bakterier, kan anvendes på menneskeceller.
We will need to edit the CRISPR-Cas system so that it can be expressed in human. So this is the first step.
How can we control it that it's doing what we want to? It's not manipulating with other parts of our genes.
Exactly. This is an excellent question because the human genome is huge. So there is a very high chance when you want to target a particular place, there are other places in the human DNA that have similar sequences. CRISPR-Cas9 then might also target those unwanted sites, and we need to avoid this. But this has been worked, I think almost worked out.
Selvom CRISPR er en meget præcis lille gensaks, er det menneskelige genom enormt stort, og det kan være svært at vide, at der kun klippes det ønskede sted. Forskerne arbejder derfor på at modificere CRISPR-Cas-systemer, så de bliver mere præcise, hvilket hun mener næsten er lykkedes. Den næste forsker, vi skal møde, er professor Guillermo Montoya, der er forskningsdirektør og gruppeleder ved Novo Nordisk Fondens Center for Proteinforskning på Københavns Universitet. Han udvikler måder at bruge CRISPR som et genredigeringsværktøj og er ret optimistisk med hensyn til udsigterne til at bruge metoden til at helbrede sygdomme, som det ellers ikke er muligt at helbrede i dag. Professor Guillermo Montoya mener, at forskning er kommet rigtig langt i forhold til at bruge CRISPR til at kurere sygdomme som kræft, ved at anvende genterapi lokalt på kroppen.
The cells that are attacking the tumor, all these applications that can be done ex vivo, where you extract cells from the patient, do the correction in the lab, and then reimplant the cells in the patient. I think this is gonna happen in really short time.
You don't fear that this kind of gene therapy also can cause some side effects that can be...
I mean, when gene therapy was used in like 20 or 30 years ago, there was some problems with some clinical trials in France where some kids were treated and they developed cancer. But this, the problem is that the technology they were using is based on vectors which integrate randomly.
Når jeg spørger ham, om han er bekymret for bivirkningerne ved at bruge den form for genterapi, svarer han, at de sygdomme, de forsøger at behandle, ikke kan behandles med eksisterende behandlingsformer, og at det, når de laver mutationer i et laboratorie, er muligt at udvælge de helt rigtige mutationer, og at der derfor ikke er nogen risiko.
The advantage of genome editing is that you are supposed to go precise to the place where the mutation or the place that you want to edit and perform the cut. This is what we are working on.
And you think it's possible to make it precise enough?
This is possible. I think that the problem is that CRISPR is a kind of evolution accelerator. In evolution, species are improving or adapting to the environment. And here you can do it much faster because you have a tool to do the editing yourself. It's like going from writing by hand to the print, basically.
Guillermo Montoya beskriver CRISPR som en evolutionsaccelerator. Han siger, at den kan speede evolution så meget op, at det kan sammenlignes med at gå fra at skrive bøger i hånden til at printe dem.
And that may be problems when you want to print things that might be ethically, yeah, not so clear.
So what kind of things could that be?
Well, in principle, I think we are a bit far off trying to create like superhumans or things like that.
Han mener dog, at vi er langt fra at kunne lave supermennesker, fordi egenskaber som styrke og intelligens er meget komplekse rent genetisk, og at man derfor ikke ved, om man ved at påvirke et gen, der er associeret med en egenskab, også påvirker andre egenskaber.
People might try to do that, but it's a little bit crazy because you do not know what's going to happen. Because you do not have all the variables that are being influenced by altering certain things.
Guillermo Montoya mener, at det er vigtigt, at der er en helt klar etisk grænse, så man ikke laver genmanipulation, der kan nedarves til næste generation. Det vil sige, at man ikke genmanipulerer æg og sædceller.
There are some outliers, I would say, like this Chinese scientist, which is, as far as I know, is in jail. And there is also one group in Moscow that are trying to do genome editing in embryos. And the problem is that if you do genome editing in embryos, basically you are altering the species. Because as this go in something that we call the germinal line, it will be transferred to the offspring. And there must be some limits to this type of research.
En af udfordringerne ved at bruge CRISPR-Cas-systemet til genmanipulation er at kontrollere, at det kun er det ønskede gen, der fjernes, og at man rammer præcist. Suping opdagede i sit laboratorie, at det ikke kun er bakterier, der forsvarer sig mod virus ved hjælp af CRISPR, men at vira kæmper imod med anti-CRISPR, og at anti-CRISPR kan bruges til at gøre genmanipulationen mere præcis.
We know like 40% of our bacteria and almost all archaea, they have CRISPR-Cas system. The question then arose, why there are still so abundant viruses found in nature? You know, there are 10 times or 100 times more virus than the host in nature. So viruses must have evolved different ways of counteracting the defense mechanism. So one of the ways is anti-CRISPR. Anti-CRISPR proteins, they can specifically inhibit a particular type of CRISPR-Cas.
En af udfordringerne er, at CRISPR-Cas-systemerne ofte klipper for meget, og tanken er derfor, at man ved hjælp af anti-CRISPR kan hæmme CRISPR-Cas, så det klipper færre steder, det vil sige kun de ønskede steder. Indtil videre har vi fokuseret på CRISPR-Cas-systemer, der kan bruges til genmanipulation. Men det er kun én slags CRISPR-Cas-system, og kun én anvendelse af CRISPR-Cas-forskning. Der er 6 forskellige slags CRISPR-Cas-systemer, og CRISPR-videnskaben kan være nyttig på mange andre måder end til redigering af det menneskelige genom. For eksempel kan den bruges til at fortælle, hvilken slags virus, der angriber bakterier i vores tarme, hvilket er ret nyttig viden. Vi vender tilbage til hvorfor senere. I den næste del af programmet vil vi udforske de andre dimensioner af CRISPR-Cas-forskning og forstå de her meget avancerede forsvarsmekanismer, der er blevet udviklet gennem millioner af års evolution, og som har hjulpet de mikroorganismer, der er afgørende for vores eksistens og hele det globale økosystem til at overleve.
Bacteria are very simple organisms. Many of the interactions that happen between them and viruses and other bacteria are like insanely complex, and we're only beginning to understand that now.
Det her er Shiraz Shah, der er seniorforsker ved Gentofte Hospital, Prospective Studies on Asthma in Childhood, Copenhagen.
And so many of these interactions that with between different bacteria, they actually drive many of the global biochemical cycles and stuff. You know, a lot of climate change, nitrogen cycling, carbon cycling, all this stuff has a lot to do with how bacteria interact with each other. So they're actually very crucial to our survival. If bacteria did not exist, then other life would basically not exist.
Shiraz Shah blev taget med ind i hele CRISPR-forskningsfeltet af Roger Garrett. Og han blev med det samme meget fascineret af, at så simple organismer som bakterier og archaea kan have et så komplekst immunforsvar.
And I was like completely mind blown. You know, I couldn't understand how can you have such a complex immune system actually in cells, in single celled organisms, right? I mean, we have immune systems, you and I, that also protect us against viruses and stuff. But our immune systems are like made up of different, like maybe 100 different cell types in our bodies, different kinds of cells working together, doing different stuff to pull off our immune reaction. And here you just have one cell and just a few genes, maybe like 10 or 20 genes encoding some proteins that basically drive the whole immune response inside that cell. And it's also an adaptive immune response, just like our immune response. So basically it learns from the infections that you get in order to combat future infections. So our immune system does that. The immune system of bacteria and archaea, the CRISPR immune system does that as well. So I was like completely mind blown that you can even have that in like a bacterial or an archaeal cell.
Shiraz Shah gik fra CRISPR-forskning på Københavns Universitet til at forske i astma hos børn på Gentofte Hospital. Du undrer dig måske over, hvad astmaforskning har at gøre med CRISPR, men CRISPR-forskning bliver brugt til at forstå interaktionen mellem bakterier og vira i vores tarmsystem, som påvirker vores immunforsvar og derfor også har en betydning for, hvorvidt vi udvikler astma.
You know, we've taken samples, maybe like fecal samples, like you know, samples of poo. So we know which bacteria they have in their stomachs at different time points, you know, and we can compare that to, you know, the different diagnoses that the kid might be getting, or stuff like obesity or ADHD or, you know, stuff like that, to try to see, is there a connection between the viruses that the kid has and the different diagnoses that the kid gets? And so one of the things that came out of this study is that most viruses in the gut at age one are not human viruses. They're viruses that infect the different bacteria that are present in the gut, right? And so we know that there are all of these viruses in the gut. We need to make the link between the different viruses in the gut and the different bacteria that they infect. How do we make that link? Well, one way to make that link is basically looking at the CRISPR-Cas system that the bacteria are using to protect themselves against those same viral infections. So we can go into the bacteria and we can read the area on the genome that encodes for the CRISPR-Cas system. And by looking at that, we can see this bacterium is trying to protect itself against that, and that virus. This bacterium is trying to protect itself against that, and that virus, etc.
Ved hjælp af CRISPR skaber bakterierne et bibliotek i deres eget genom med sekvenser af DNA fra alle de vira, de er blevet angrebet af. Og det er derfor muligt at få et komplekst billede af, hvilke vira, der angriber bakterierne i vores tarme.
People who are associated with lots and lots of diverse bacteria on their bodies, etc., they are more protected from chronic disease, right? So there's kind of a paradigm shift within microbiology at the moment where people are starting to view bacteria, instead of viewing them as bad guys, they're starting to view them as good guys. This is really interesting. This is kind of a big deal because we've had the complete opposite view of bacteria for the past 100 years.
Bakterier og vira, der tidligere er blevet set som vores fjender, viser sig at være vores bedste venner. Generelt ser det ud som om, det at have mange forskellige bakterier og vira i vores tarme, har en meget positiv effekt på vores immunforsvar. Alt det her kan du høre meget mere om i fjerde episode af Lyden af Videnskab, nemlig virus og bakterier holder os raske. Og viden om CRISPR-Cas-systemer er et redskab til at få en dybere forståelse for det komplekse forhold mellem de bakterier og vira, vi er vært for, og hvordan de påvirker vores immunsystem, og måske endda vores adfærd. Som nævnt før, er der mange forskellige slags CRISPR-Cas-systemer, som potentielt kan have stor betydning for menneskeheden. I det følgende forklarer Shiraz Shah, hvad de andre CRISPR-Cas-systemer er i stand til. Til dem af jer, der stadig lytter, og derfor må være interesseret i mere end bare almindelig CRISPR-viden. Det her bliver virkelig interessant.
As we know, bacteria have been on Earth for 4 billion years, right? Way more than us. We've only been here, you know, for, you know, a few million years. Then you can imagine that if you think about bacteria having been there for 4 billion years and having had their immune systems, of course, their immune systems have had a lot more time to diverge into different versions of immune systems than ours. And even ours are diverse, so theirs are going to be even more diverse, right? And so you can divide the immune systems into two major classes, like class 1 systems and class 2 systems. Class 2 systems are the ones that are being used right now in biotechnology for genome engineering in human beings or in animals or in, you know, eukaryotic cells and stuff like that. We're using them as a technology for changing DNA. And I think the main reason for that is that class 2 systems are quite simple.
Vi har CRISPR nummer 2, som er den type, der er let at bruge til genmanipulation, og som er i familie med nummer 5 og 6, der alle består af et enkelt protein. Og så er der CRISPR nummer 1 og 3, som er meget mere kompliceret, fordi de består af flere forskellige proteiner. De er konstrueret på en modulær måde, hvor CRISPR-Cas-systemet er opdelt i to forskellige dele. Et tilpasningskompleks, der skærer en DNA-sekvens ud af den angribende virus, og som lærer den i organismens eget DNA. Og et interferenskompleks, der jagter og dræber virusen. Fordelen ved det er, at de kan bytte de her to dele med andre organismer. De kan vælge at bytte bare den ene del eller begge dele, og det gør dem meget mere tilpasningsdygtige i forhold til ændringer i miljøet.
So the bacterium one can say, I have this interference complex and this adaptation complex, and you have this interference complex and this adaptation complex. Let's swap it over. So they can swap both the adaptation and interference complex with each other, or they can choose to only swap half of the system with each other, right? And so what that reminds you of, actually, which is really interesting, I think, is that it's like CRISPR-Cas systems are like, quote-unquote, having sex. Because that's what sex is. If you look at what sex is from a biological point of view, from an evolutionary point of view.
Man kan sige, at de har sex med deres artsfæller, hvilket skal forstås på den måde, at ved at bytte den ene, den anden eller begge dele af deres CRISPR-Cas-system, bytter de gener, hvilket også er det, der sker, når organismer formerer sig ved at have sex. På den måde har de mulighed for at tilpasse sig af miljøændringer uden at mutere. At mutere er normalt den måde, mikroorganismer tilpasser sig, fordi mutationer er ændringer i organismens DNA, der ændrer organismens egenskaber.
Mutation is often, you know, said to be a major mechanism by which evolution occurs. So you will have one organism which will gain a mutation in a gene that encodes for a protein, then that protein will function slightly differently. In most cases, the mutation is going to destroy the protein, but in a few cases, the mutation is going to be beneficial, maybe in that particular environment. And so that's going to confer a selective advantage to that particular organism. It can be a bacterium or an animal or whatever. And so then that mutation becomes more and more widespread in nature, and then you have a new variant of this gene or protein or whatever, right?
Ulempen ved at tilpasse sig på den måde er, at de fleste mutationer er dødelige for organismen, og kun meget få af dem er fordelagtige. Det er derfor en meget mere risikabel tilpasningsmetode. Når organismerne udveksler dele af deres CRISPR-Cas-system, deler de deres gener med hinanden uden at mutere. Men alligevel skaber det en genetisk variation, der gør det muligt for organismerne at tilpasse sig ændringer.
The advantage of doing it that way is basically that you don't have to go through the detrimental step of mutation. Because if you mutate your gene, there is a big chance that the gene is going to not work anymore.
I forhold til CRISPR-Cas-systemer vil det sige, at når bakterier bytter enten det ene, det andet eller begge moduler af deres CRISPR-Cas-systemer, er der en stor sandsynlighed for, at nogen at kombinationerne gør dem bedre i stand til at forsvare sig over for visse virusangreb. Når jeg spørger Shiraz Shah, om han synes, det er det interessant, fordi denne her viden om de forskellige CRISPR-Cas-systemer kan bruges til at forbedre vores levevilkår, eller om han blot synes, det er interessant, fordi det er et helt specielt og meget avanceret system, som bakterier har udviklet gennem millioner år, svarer han.
Yeah, it's a really good question that I ask myself often. I have to be honest, sometimes like being a scientist is like it's like kind of trippy in a way. So it's like you're on a trip because you sometimes discover things, you find things that are just too crazy. And it's like, "What? You know, how did that even occur? this is just a CRISPR-Cas system, which is just an immune system in a bacterium. Why in the world is it, quote-unquote, having sex with other CRISPR-Cas systems? You know, it just seems really, really crazy, right? They're probably pressured and pressured and pressured and then driven to go through these very extreme measures is to solve some kind of a problem in nature. And we have to try to figure out, okay, what problem is this mechanism trying to solve? Then we can use that mechanism for our own purposes, right?
En type af CRISPR, som Shiraz Shah ved vil kunne anvendes bioteknologisk, er CRISPR nummer 3. CRISPR-Cas nummer 3 har den særlige egenskab, at det kan have forskellige funktioner. Shiraz Shah sammenligner det med en computer, som kan koble forskellige USB-enheder på, som giver computeren nye funktioner.
So the Type 3 system is a laptop, right? And then you have these USB devices that you can stick into the laptop and upgrade the functionality of the laptop either by having a webcam or like a USB storage thing or maybe a, you know, all kinds of stuff that you can stick into the laptop. So you have the laptop which is carrying out your core functionality, which always works, but then you can upgrade the laptop by adding new USB things in there, and those will like temporarily provide an additional function to your laptop, but then you can take it out again and the laptop will still be working and you can swap it out for another USB device.
CRISPR-Cas to systemer, der er lavet til at bekæmpe virus, og som man i dag bruger til genmanipulation, er et ret simpelt system. Så Shiraz Shah forestiller sig, at der vil være mange flere anvendelsesmuligheder i CRISPR-Cas 3-systemer, fordi det allerede er et multifunktionelt system.
I think this can really be used in biotech. Why? Because what we're seeing today is that people are engineering class 2 systems to do other stuff than killing viruses. And so my point is this, with type 3 systems, you have a system which is, from the bottom, it's already designed for multifunctionality, because you can have these USB devices plugging in and out of it, right?
Så er der CRISPR-Cas 4-systemer, der er helt særlige, fordi det er CRISPR-Cas-systemer i plasmider. Plasmider er små cirkelformede stykker DNA, der kan sprede sig mellem bakterier, lidt ligesom en virus. Det er ofte ikke en fordel, men en ulempe for bakterier at have dem, og bakterierne vil derfor gerne af med dem og bruger deres CRISPR-Cas-systemer imod dem. Men plasmiderne vil gerne være bakterierne, ikke mindst fordi de ikke kan leve andre steder. Shiraz Shahs kollega Rafa fandt ud af, at plasmider også har deres CRISPR-Cas-systemer, som er CRISPR-Cas 4-systemer.
Rafa, he came to me and he said, Shiraz, we have to try to look for CRISPR-Cas systems on plasmids. So the bacteria will have its own DNA, which is a giant piece of DNA. Then you have plasmids, which are these additional small circular DNA, and they can like upgrade the functionality of the bacterium in one way or another. Plasmids can do all kinds of things, and plasmids can also be sometimes like a real headache for the bacterium.
For at finde ud af, hvad plasmiderne beskytter sig imod, kiggede de i plasmidets DNA for at se på de DNA-sekvenser, der ved hjælp af CRISPR-Cas var blevet implementeret. Og de fandt, at det plasmiderne beskyttede sig imod, var andre plasmider. Plasmiderne forsøger altså at tage patent på den bakterie, de lever i, ved at bekæmpe andre plasmider med CRISPR-Cas 4. Og for at gøre det her endnu mere kompliceret, så er CRISPR-Cas 4 det CRISPR-Cas-system, som bakterier bruger til at forsvare sig imod plasmider, men som plasmiderne har taget fra bakterier for at bruge til deres egen fordel til at bekæmpe andre plasmider, så de kan få bakterien for sig selv.
So it kind of, you know, it paints a picture of these plasmids as being these really like sinister, you know, things that are waging war against each other, and it was just really cool.
På en måde gør plasmiderne det samme som vi gør med CRISPR-Cas 2 systemer, som vi har taget fra bakterierne for at bruge det til vores egen fordel.
And so it seems that plasmids have done this way before human beings. They've taken a CRISPR-Cas system and they're using it for their own purpose to fight other plasmids.
That's crazy.
That's
really crazy.
It is crazy.
It's so advanced.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's so funny. So weird. There's so much trippy shit.
Når jeg spørger Shiraz Shah, om han mener, at det er en viden, der kan bruges til at udvikle bioteknologiske applikationer, er hans svar et klart ja.
Plasmids don't even have a brain, right? If plasmids know how to use a CRISPR-Cas system for their own advantage, then obviously there are going to be a lot more different things that we can do with that same CRISPR-Cas system.
Han håber, at vi kan bruge CRISPR-Cas 4-systemer til at bekæmpe antibiotikaresistens, som netop er en resistens, der er knyttet til plasmider, og på den måde spreder sig mellem bakterier. Det kan derfor være muligt at udvikle en metode til at bekæmpe antibiotikaresistente plasmider ved hjælp af CRISPR-Cas nummer 4 systemer.
Antibiotic resistance has been projected by the United Nations by 2050 to be causing the most deaths in the world and all kinds of stuff like, right? So it's like a major problem out there waiting for us, just like climate change. It's something that's going to really mess shit up for us as human beings. And so since we know that, you know, most of the antibiotic resistance that goes on in bacteria and that is transferred between bacteria is transferred with plasmids, right? Then maybe if plasmids can use, you know, type 4 systems to wage war against each other, maybe we can also use type 4 systems to wage war against them. And in that way, we can maybe wage war against antibiotic resistance. That's what I hope. That's what I'm crossing my fingers for.
Videnskaben er kun lige begyndt at forstå kompleksiteten af nogle af de her CRISPR-Cas-systemer, og mulighederne for, hvordan denne her videnskab kan og vil ændre fremtiden, er både uforudsigelig og fuld af håb og drømme, etiske dilemmaer og faldgrupper. En ting, der er blevet nævnt af alle de forskere, jeg har talt med, er nødvendigheden af, at der er nogle etiske retningslinjer, der gælder for alle. Tak fordi du lyttede til Lyden af Videnskab. Hvis du har ris og ros og forslag til fremtidige programmer, så kontakt mig endelig. Kontaktoplysninger findes på hjemmesiden lydenafvidenskab.dk. Podcasten er støttet af Novo Nordisk Fonden. Tilrettelagt, skrevet og klippet af mig, Sofie Hjort. Musik er Hjalte Bisted Hjort. Hjemmeside og grafisk design er Sara Laub. Og hvis du kan lide denne her podcast, så må du meget gerne dele den. Så kan jeg nemlig lave meget mere af samme skuffe. Og husk at abonnere og få meget mere viden.
But before we finish, I'd like to add a few footnotes to the things you've seen today. Today we have a happy society. Ah, there was a time when these things did not exist.
Didn't people grow old and feeble in those days, sir?
Indeed they did. Old men in the bad old days used to renounce, retire, take to religion, spend their time reading, thinking. Now such is progress. At 60 we have the tastes and the powers of a 17-year-old. Why, the old men have no time, no leisure from pleasure, not a moment to sit down and think. They're much too busy scampering from feely to feely, from girl to pneumatic girl. Fortunate boys, no pains have been spared to make your lives emotionally easy, to preserve you as far as possible from having emotions at all.